Thank you for listening to this Podcast One Sportsnet production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Welcome to Real Jam Radio. I'm Daniel LaRue, your host, and so happy to have you with us. This is part two of the Over-Under podcast with Arturo Galletti of BoxScoreGeeks.com. We went through all of the teams over the two podcasts using the numbers from the LVH Superbook at the Westgate Las Vegas Resort, as reported by Canis Hoopus, and talked about the teams. I thought it was a good vehicle to talk about how teams got better, got worse, and to think about, even though I'm not a gambler, just to think about how teams are going to work out. So, as I said, this is part two, so this is Milwaukee on down. So if you want to get the earlier teams, you can listen to part one. The Real GM link with this should have the timestamps for every team, so if you're looking for one specific team, feel free to do that. Hopefully you hop around a little bit after that, but you can do whatever you like. This is part two, so thank you so much for listening. So the first team for this part of the podcast is the Milwaukee Bucks. They finished a horrendous 15-67 last year. Do you think they got better or worse?
I think they got slightly better. Slightly better.
Yeah, I think that the way that they got better is in a lot of ways, and we talked about this the last time, is they had the worst season possible last year. I think in terms of wins, in terms of a lot of other stuff, some off the court stuff, well, except for getting a new owner.
I think and I wrote this before the season when I did the Bucks preview. I said the Bucks are tanking. People are like, "No, they're not tanking. They're going to win." The Bucks are tanking. They did everything that you would do if you were tanking. They just basically did it. They did stealth tanking last year. So, I mean, I think they specifically were going for certain things. They got in some very young players, got them some reps. I think we're down this path again with this team. So, again, I think that there's a point, and we were talking about it before, which is we kind of think that it's not in their best interest to win a lot of games, right? I think they still want to get some more young players in and get some people some reps. So, you know, we were talking about that. We think that there's a shot. There's a shot if that they make the playoffs as an 8 seed. But it's a long shot. It's not by no means something that is not aspirational.
Yeah, I think that it's a good way of putting it. Is that it's a possibility. You know, their best case scenario is substantially rosier than their worst case scenario, which is true for some teams. But I think that their flaws are so big right now that even if Kidd does a good job coaching, and even if Jabari is as good offensively as we think he could be, and maybe he's closer defensively, their flaws are probably going to keep them from winning a lot of games. And so in a lot of ways, I think that could be the best thing for them long-term, to be able to use this to get another guy, because I think they need answers at both guard positions. And so hopefully for them, they can get one of those in the draft, and then they get the other one eventually, whether it be this coming year as a free agent or a trade, or they get him at a future time. I think that they're closer than I think some people think, but Larry Sanders is pivotal to that as well.
Yeah, I think, and again, there's a lot of ifs in this team. I've got them finishing fifth in that division like 78% of the time. I've only got them going over like 40% and maybe make the playoffs about 2% of the time. So there's a lot of ifs, and I do think, I mean, I think they'll be better. Like, so they won 16, maybe they finish at like, I think 24.5 is a good number, because if they finished at 25 wins, I think they would consider that a victory. I mean, would you agree that that's something, like, if they win 25 games, they'd probably be happy with it?
Yeah, I think they'd be happy with it. I would say that their fans and their ownership and all that would probably define success, not really with wins and losses, but I think that in terms of wins and losses, that would be fine.
Yeah, if they're competitive. I think, again, this is a team that has a lot of young players that, like, you know, like 25 wins might be acceptable this year. It won't be next year. So I think next year they're thinking getting closer to 500. And I think they're not off base with thinking that. They can keep putting some pieces together there.
So we'll move on. Next team is another interesting one, Minnesota. Oh, so they won 40 games last year.
Yes.
I think we both agree that they got worse.
They got worse.
I think there's a question of how much worse they got, and I think you have some answers on that.
So Vegas has them at 25.5, and basically all the models think that they go over that. Now, there's a couple of mitigating factors, which is one, like, you know, we don't know whether they're going to... I think they own their own draft pick, so we don't know if they're going to try that hard. I still believe that there's a chance they try to move Kevin Martin and Pekovic. Because it does kind of make sense. I hear these weird things where, like, Ding is, like, the fourth or fifth best. He's, like, the fifth big in the rotation now behind, like, Bennett and
Thad Young.
And so Ding should not be the fifth big man on the rotation. He should be, like, third at most. So there's things that worry me, and I keep hearing that, like, Flip doesn't believe in the three. So Flip is going to take a lot of what we call crap shots, which is he's going to be taking a lot of 18, 19-footers, which is just, you know, a recipe for disaster. So... given all that, like, the models still like it. I think this is a team that's going to try, and I think 30 is where I kind of see this team falling. Do you kind of disagree with me or agree with me?
I agree with you. What they have is downside risk because, to me, the Timberwolves are two different teams. They're a team that's competing right now with guys like Thaddeus Young and Kevin Martin and Barea and Pekovic and all that. And then there are Wiggins and Levine and, to a degree, Rubio. And so these guys who are still figuring it out. So... I think they're a team that will follow whatever happens at the beginning. So if they have a strong beginning, which I actually think they might, then they'll keep on going for it and they'll finish short of the playoffs, but they'll blow through the over and they'll do fine. But if they want to pull the plug, they are better positioned than almost anybody, except that a lot of their win now guys have unfavorable contracts, which makes them harder to move. You know, you're not going to get somebody to say, hey, I see Kevin Martin at this contract as an asset.
Why not?
So,
I mean, like, actually, think about it. Like, at that rate, with the TV deal, then he actually is an asset. Him and Pekovic are both assets. It's like, you have to kind of think about it, like, so is that a bad contract at half price? And neither of those is a bad contract at half price for certain teams.
The way that I would describe it is that they've become less negative assets, but I still don't think they're positive. I don't think somebody sees Pekovic at that deal and goes, oh, I have to jump on that. I think it's less of a deterrent. Like the Warriors, it's reported that that was a big part of their stick up with a potential trade. Obviously, Klay Thompson was a bigger one, was Kevin Martin. And I think what we've learned now is that that was silly, if that was true. But I think that Martin, at this point in his career, he has a very specific role, and you can do that. But I don't think anybody's going to give up anything for him. That said, if a team has space and they have, let's say, a trade exception, I could see a team doing it for that as long as that doesn't push them into the tax or something.
Yeah, again, my biggest worry with this team is, like, the noise with Flip about, like, oh, we're going to take mid-range jumpers, and we don't like three. That's like archaic coach speak. And if that's what he's going to do, then this team will actually be worse than the projections, way worse than projections. But that's my biggest worry, that, like, that Flip won't get out of its own way and, like, we'll get them playing, like, dumb basketball. And you know, he might be brilliant basketball mind, but, like, this is not the 1970s or 80s anymore. You need to – 19-footers and 20-footers are the way for your team to not be good.
Agreed completely. Anything else on the Wolves?
No. I think another team that'll be fun to lots of dunking, lots of transition. It should be fun. I actually think Bennett will be better than he was last year, so it's going to be interesting.
Here.
So I think they're going to be a fun team. I think as I said, 30 is my number for them.
Yeah, I think they're going to be a really fun league pass team for basketball nerds like us. I think there are a lot of guys on this team, more so than almost any other NBA team, that I still feel like I need to figure out.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I know Rubio pretty well and Pekovic and, you know, all the older guys, obviously. But Wiggins, Levine, even Thaddeus Young, to a point, to me, they're big question marks. And understanding where that team is and where they're going is very useful because they're obviously we don't know what the division format's going to be. But, you know, if they're getting something in Wiggins or Levine, either one, if they can become at least a solid starter or a very good starter, that totally changes the future of this Timberwolves team because those guys are both going to be there for basically as long as Minnesota wants them.
Yeah, I have them in the playoffs about 10% of the time, and I have them winning the division like 1.5% of the time. Now again, you know, that's, as I said, if you know, you have to have like a couple of train wrecks happen in front of them for like anything like that to happen, and they have to be way better than they and take a leap, and like Ruby all of a sudden has to start making like jumpers or something. But you know, there's some mild hope in that team, right?
Yeah, another team with more than mild hope is the New Orleans Pelicans, and last season they won 34 games. Again, I think they're a good team where we don't have to say are they better or are they worse, but how much better are they?
They're better. I think that, like, I ran the numbers, and the numbers aren't, like, they think they're somewhat better, right? They don't think they're way better. The projections are about, like, 39 for them right now, and the numbers that I have, like, all the basically it's favoring the under for them. I think the problem lies in the fact that, like, where they're playing, right? So it's we both think they're better. We both think there's a bunch of, like, teams in front of them that got better as well. So it's really rough. I do think there is a world where this team is a 4 seed, right? And it's not an insane world. I even have them winning their division about 1% of the time. And again, that's saying a lot with, like, the Rockets, the Spurs, the Mavs, and the Grizzlies in front of you. That is the equivalent of the group of death in soccer. There are 5 teams in that division that could probably be a top 3 or top 4 seed in the East. Would you agree to that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that New Orleans is also going to be a great test of a term that is used in other fields called spillover effects. That Omer Sheikh is a wonderful defender, and I think replacing their shoddy other big man defense with him will be a huge thing for their overall team defense if he can stay healthy. And I think that's something that sometimes, at least to me, can be hard to quantify, but I can see it very quickly.
Yeah, as good as I think this team is, I only have them making the playoffs about a quarter, 25% of the time. But again, it's the West, right? So, I mean, it's more of a function of the West than who they are. They do have some players on the roster that get hurt, right? So you have to kind of consider that as a possibility. So again, as much as I think this is better, as much as I think this might be a team of the future, I just don't think the future is quite now. So under is my I think again, I'm at 41 with this team, which is the Vegas is at 41.5. I'm at 500 with this team.
Yeah, the other frustrating thing about that, and again, it relates back to how they acquired the guys they already have, but they didn't have a draft pick in the first round, and they also gave up their future pick. So they didn't really get an infusion of talent other than Sheikh. So you're relying a lot on internal improvement and improved health, which they certainly could have. I'm not going to say they don't, but you're asking a lot for them to make, well, not to make the jump to the over, but to make them into the playoffs. They basically need to have a 10-win internal improvement, which is a lot.
They also lost one of their best players. I forget the name of
Alfredo Camino.
Yeah, he was really good for them last year, and, like, losing him is kind of underrated. So they added some players, but they also lost some players. So at the end of the day, you know, they were 34 wins. I think they're about 7 wins better. And in the same thing, I think if they were in the East, they'd be like 45-50. I don't think they're demonstrably worse. They are about the same as all the teams in the Southeast. We said that. They're maybe probably, like, slightly better than any team in the Southeast. And I am including Miami in that discussion.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting question, and obviously Bradley Beal's injury puts that more into question. But the other challenge with them, and we've seen this in recent years, is that they're a very top-heavy team.
Yeah.
And top-heavy teams can be good, and they can also be way better in the playoffs, but they are also very susceptible to injury, especially when your depth is bad, and their depth is bad.
And Anthony Davis is not like the golden, like, he's not the poster boy for staying on the court. So that's another thing to consider with this team. So, again, I think, as I said, there's a 25% chance they make the playoffs, at least according to my numbers. Let's see how many times I have them winning 50 games at least. I have them winning 50 games a fair chunk of the time. I think something like 10%. Hold on. So I have them winning 50 games or more like 9% of the time. So, again, this is a good team. It's just that we walk through the caveats. There are injuries. There's not a lot of depth. They play in a tough conference. So we're bullish, but I think I got 41. What do you have?
I think they're going to go over. My instinct is 44, 45. I think that's about where they're going to be. But they're a team that, as you said, I could totally see them winning 50. I could see them making the playoffs.
I
could see them winning 35, too.
Tyreek is already banged.
Again.
Tyreek is already banged up. Anthony Davis always gets banged up. Right, so Eric Gordon is like a walking hospital. But so there are some real issues with. I wish they had like better guard depth too. So there are some real issues with this roster, right? And in that division in particular, like any issues will be made apparent immediately.
Yeah, agree completely. Let's move on to the Knicks. The New York Knicks last year went 37-45, so 37 wins. Do you think they are better or worse than last year?
So I think the Knicks are exactly the same. But let me caveat that. They are, as currently built, they are exactly the same as last year. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a second.
I think they're a little bit better, but again, it's largely the same, but a little bit better for two reasons. One, I think their coaching is going to be better. And second of all, the only guy they lost, and obviously he's a very good player, is Tyson Chandler.
Who's protecting the rim on this team?
Absolutely no one. Absolutely no one. But I think that the addition of Calderon and the addition of a series of guys who can actually play, you know, I think D'Alembert is not a terrible player. I think he's fine. Jason Smith is fine. I think that what they did this year is they built a roster that is closer 1-12 than it was, even though the top is about the same.
I'm gonna say the same thing I used to say about the Raptors every year, which is like, this is a team that they're a Bargnani trade away from being a top four seed. They basically, because everything that you've done, you've brought in Calderon, you've got Prigioni, you've got all these great shooters, you're putting in all the spacing. If Bargnani is your starting power forward or center, everything that you're trying to do is going to go by the wayside because he is just a giant hole of suck. Once they move him, and I think actually, between Amare and Bargnani, it's about $30 million expiring contracts. So any team that wants to blow it up, so any team, say, in the Southeast, that like runs into like injuries and wants to blow it up, the Knicks are a phone call away. So I do think that I think the Knicks are going to make a large move, and once they make that move, this is going to be a way, way better team. So I think they're going to hover as like slightly below 500 for like maybe the first half of the season, and they're going to be like closer to a 50-win team after the trade deadline. That's my take on the Knicks, right? So and so even though kind of everything says under on this team, I would either stay away or, like, I mean, I think I'd stay away from that or maybe, like, think about the division. I don't know what their odds are for division. But I do think this is the most likely candidate for a complete roster transformation.
Yeah, and the other factor with the complete roster transformation is that they have a new guy running the show, and that is the classic example of when you see that is somebody who wants their people in there. And they've already had a lot of turnover. I mean, there are seven guys that were on this team last year that are not on it this year.
If Flip Saunders gets 25 games into the season, looks at his roster and goes like, you know what, we're not competing this year. I'm just going to get rid of Peck's contract and Kevin Martin's contract and somebody, who is the other one? I think Chase Bunninger is the other long-term contract. And the Knicks go like, we'll take all three, just throw in Deng, right? And we'll throw in some picks. They could do that. It's like if Kobe wants out, they could totally take Kobe's contract. If any one of the Southeast teams want to like blow it up, they can eat like if and all they have to do is basically they just keep like the keep Hinkie on the line, and between them and Hinkie, they can basically clean out your entire cap between those two teams.
Bringing up Hinkie is actually what I was going to do, because the other possibility with the Knicks is that if things aren't going well, they can actually shift a lot of their salary onto the Sixers. I've been saying for a while that I think Amare is going to end the season on the Sixers, or at least end the trade deadline on the Sixers.
I think the trick with that is you have to be real careful, because if I'm the Knicks and I have $30 million in expiring deal, I want to convert those $30 million into like $30 million in competent long term players that are going to be underpriced in the current CBA. Because basically, and I was saying this, the salary cap is going, any salary cap space is going to take like a 75% discount in like 18 months. So you basically want to turn whatever expiring deals you can into like players that are being fire sold by another team. So this is why if you're the Knicks, you have to be looking at like rosters or teams that want to basically just blow it up. So you pay attention and you pounce, because you have that one move, and now is the perfect time. And again, there are teams. It's like, what if Miami decides to blow it up? What if Pat Riley like gets like 40 games, like 30 games in season, and decides to blow it up, right? You know. And again, I'm not saying this is, and you know, I'm going to get killed by Heat fans. I'm not saying this is like a 20% odds, but I think there is a 1 in 100 chance that like Pat Riley might want to do that, right? And if that happens, and you're the Knicks, then you want to be ready for when that happens. Like, I think there is a 50% chance or better that there's going to be, like, a decent team that we have in the contenders list that's going to want to blow it up before the end of the season. Do you think that's reasonable and fair?
I think that's reasonable. The other team that's not a contender at all that I could see doing, not necessarily a panic trade, but a trade like that, is Boston, because Boston has about $20 million in bad money for next year with Jeff Green and Jared Wallace, and obviously bad money is changing a little bit depending on how smoothing works, but I could see a team taking advantage of Danny Ainge wanting flexibility and just saying, hey, we'll take on your guys if you're willing to give us some sort of asset. And the Knicks would be a perfect team for that because I don't think they're going to use their cap space in 2015 anyway.
Yeah, but they're not a great roster, though. I mean, like, I'd be more curious somebody like the Nets. If I'm looking within the division, the Nets would be more interesting with Lopez if you trust that you can keep Lopez healthy. But, I mean, there are other teams. I would rather have Calderon than Rondo at this point. And I don't think you're getting a marked upgrade if that's what you're getting. There's nobody else on that roster that I'd like. Who else on the Celtics would you like?
James Young. I think James, if you could say, hey, we want James Young.
They're not going to give you James Young. They're not going to give you Marcus Smart. They're not going to give you any of the young players. So I think you're more thinking about, like, you want an older team with really good players. Like, I don't think the Mavs are blowing it up, but, like, the Mavs, the Grizzlies, you know, you make a list. It's like who looks like, you know, maybe they want to go in another direction. Grizzlies are interesting, I think, because there's a world where like they're like, you know, Mark's leaving and everything kind of went wrong, and so we're gonna move some players out and maybe start from scratch. And again, if you're the Knicks, you just want to sit there and go like, I have these $30 million. And I can correct a lot of your mistakes. And again, if you threw in some players, like say if you took the best guys from the Knicks and the best guys from the Grizzlies, that would be a hell of a team. If you took the best guys from the Knicks and the best guys from the Heat, that would be a hell of a team. Same thing with the Hawks. Same thing with the, I mean, I don't think the Hornets are going to blow it up, but there somebody's going to want to, right?
And the other guy that I'm thinking about, not in terms of a team blowing it up necessarily, is Joe Johnson's contract has changed around a lot with the new TV deal. And I could see a team taking on his money if the Nets decide they want to have cap space, which is what the Nets should do because they're actually a legitimate destination for guys.
What about a Barnes for Hibbert swap?
I don't see the Pacers doing it. That's just selling way too low on Hibbert, you know, because cap space doesn't mean that much to the Pacers right now. So you're getting nothing. If they could get a guy like Shumpert, maybe, or they could get, you know, a long Tim Hardaway Jr., a long-term piece, maybe. But I wouldn't do it just as a dump because there's no point.
Yeah, I think the Knicks need to set up a 24-hour trade hotline and 24-hour email as well. So, like, basically, like, no, you send us a trade offer, we will listen. So, again, I don't think there's, like, maybe a 2% chance that, like, the Knicks team that you see now is the Knicks team that you're going to see at the end of the season. So as I said, I think they're a 35-win team now. They're going to be better at the end of the season. So even though my model kind of says under, I think over is what you have to think for this team. Although kind of I would stay away from it because I do think that it's going to be way different than we see now. It's the Barg thing. Barg's always he's going to get moved. I don't see any way where Phil still has him on the court at the end of the season.
Agreed. We'll move on to a team that we're not going to talk about over under. But it's the Oklahoma City Thunder, and their number was, they won 59 games last year. It was 57, but all of that happened before Durant's injury.
Yeah, all the models already didn't like it because, you know, they like Cephalosian, they like a couple of the other guys they lost, but that actually goes down further, I think. And again, I don't think it's going to be that terrible, maybe, because I think he's out, like, they're saying 6 to 8 weeks. It's already 2.5, so something like 4.5 weeks, so a month and a half, maybe. So I say that they probably make them about 4 wins worse. So I think that now I'd have them at like 52. Now the problem is like when you move to 52 wins in the West, that might mean you're a 5 seed. I think they're probably off the books. They're under. I think that it's going to be really interesting because, you know, like last year their point margin and their win percentage was actually the same with or without Russell. I don't think that's going to be the case with or without KD.
I agree with that. I think the other thing that's important to note with this is that what I've read on this type of fracture is that the minimum is 6 to 8 weeks, but it can be substantially more than that. So that is the risk that you need to account for, because I think that this team without him for an extended period, let's say it's 2 months or maybe even, heaven forbid, 3 or 4 months, I think they're not dead in the water, but I think they're a really hard bet in the West that is so deep because they're not going to be getting many games off. They're going to be facing teams that are very good, that are very well coached. And I think that they will be entertaining without Durant, but I think that they will have a lot of trouble with the playoff teams in the West without him. And there are a lot of playoff caliber teams in the West.
Yeah, I think the odds that are the best buy off this news are probably the division odds for the Nuggets. I think the Nuggets are 100-1 right now.
That's a great bet.
Actually, 20-1. But like,
still good.
That's still good. That's like, you should be thinking about. I mean, I had them winning that division 10% of the time before. That number is going to be significantly higher now. It's going to be something like 15-20%. So that's good. That's really good. And again, this doesn't mean that like I don't think that the Nuggets are likely to win the division. There's enough rough, but they're now more like I think it's a 3-team race between Oklahoma, Portland, and Denver, right? And with Denver probably being, you know, I think probably Oklahoma and Portland are probably about the same right now in terms of like where I think, because I think I got both teams are at the 51-52 win mark now. Would you kind of agree with that?
I have Portland a little bit below that, but I think that I can see the argument. So I want to walk through a little bit why I think this is a little bit of danger. Here is the first little stretch of the season for the Thunder, the regular season. At Portland, at the Clippers, home against Denver, at Brooklyn, at Toronto, home against Memphis. That stretch is going to be hard. You know, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they go 2-4 in that stretch, even if they're playing with emotion and they're playing hard, because those teams are almost all really good.
Yeah, no, there are no easy nights in the West, right? So I think that's kind of the case. And as I said, I mean, I think, you know, hey, Russell's fantasy value goes up in this one. And Russell was actually kind of insane at the end of the – insanely good at the end of the last season. And I do think having him and Reggie is going to be kind of an interesting dichotomy. And like, the other thing that's undersold is Ibaka's kind of banged up too right now. And there's noise I'm hearing that, like, you know, and Scotty should know better. He should be playing Steven Adams. But I keep hearing noise that Perkins is still features – prominently in the rotation. So I worry that, like, you know, without KD, they're like a 45-win team. I mean, without KD, they're basically 45-50. They're Trailblazers. I don't think there's any marked difference between them and the Trailblazers if you take out KD. They're basically the same as the other three teams. And as you say, like, if it gets extended, then it becomes a bigger issue. I do think they eventually, like, I would still think that they win that division. But I think it's a lot. I think it's, you know, they're in the 52 win range now with that injury.
To me, there are two silver linings with this injury. Obviously, it's a huge ass cloud. To me, the first one is I'm hoping Scotty Brooks gets it through his skull that, hey, we're losing all this offense. We should get offense from center, and it leads to them playing Steven Adams more. That's my irrational hope with this. The second one is, I think that there's a very good chance at the end of this run without Durant that we will finally understand if Scotty Brooks is a bad coach and how bad of a coach he is. If he is, because if they flounder without him, despite having other talent, I think that's going to tell us all we need to know.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think this is a decent roster. I mean, I think they do have some issues with depth in this roster. They just have had guys that have played an insane amount of mids before. So this isn't like a situation where San Antonio could lose. Basically, San Antonio, I could see San Antonio could lose like four players, and I would still say, it doesn't really matter. It's San Antonio, that the roster is crazy. Well, actually, I think the only guy where it's critical, and you can tell, it's like when Leonard goes out for extended periods, the defense kind of suffers. But other than that, I think that, you know, KD is really important to this team and to their spacing and to what he does, to the shooting, for everything else. He makes everybody better. And I think, as I said, there's a reason why they didn't get any worse when Russell went out. And it's not that Russell is bad. I mean, they had a very decent backup in Reggie Jackson, and they kind of went to a different style that allowed for that. I don't know that, like, their changeup without KD is going to be that effective, because teams are just basically going to give Russ all the bad shots he wants, and then they're going to basically challenge everybody else on the team. And if it's Russ and Kendrick Perkins, then that's a real problem, because I don't know that who's hitting the threes on this team.
They're going to have to hope that Morrow can do more than he was expected to do. And he's a great shooter. I covered him earlier in his career. He's an amazing shooter, but he's not much of a creator. So if Westbrook can create for him and for Jeremy Lamb, presumably, that would be really nice.
So what do you play? You play Morrow at the four?
No, I play Morrow at the three.
You're basically saying you're going Reggie Jackson, Russell, Morrow at the three, and then Ibaka, who's a little banged up, and then like Steven Adams. I mean, actually, if he goes Perkins in that situation, then then you really need Perkins. Ibaka to step up in terms of the shooting. I think they're gonna look and feel a lot like the Trailblazers without KD.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way of thinking about it. Next team is the Orlando Magic, team that you and I have talked about before. Orlando won 23 games last year. Are they better or are they worse?
I think they're slightly better. I'm worried about the fact that, like, they basically lost. They've been having some injuries on this team. I do think, again, I think everybody else on that conference is, on the division is actually, it's actually the best division in the East. It's not great, but it's the best. And they're not quite good enough for me to think that they're going to beat the Vegas over, which is 28.5. I think they're slightly below that, and I haven't seen anything to kind of indicate that I'm wrong about that. I mean, would you agree with that? What do you see?
I agree completely. They added some pieces. I like Gordon Fine. I like Channing Frye for what they're doing and all that, but they lost Aaron Aflalo, who was a good player for them.
Ben Gordon.
Oh, Ben Gordon. Ooh. And so
yeah,
I think
like Eric Gordon a lot more than I like Ben Gordon.
Yeah, I think everybody does at this point. Probably since Aaron Gordon was about in high school, I think that's probably been where the line was, where Aaron Gordon surpassed Ben Gordon. But I think that the problem for the Magic is that I don't see them having this upside potential for this season. I think that their guys they have an interesting collection for the long term, but I don't see how they put it together for a good run this season. I just don't see it.
Do you like this roster better or like less or more than Milwaukee's roster?
I like the top guys on Milwaukee better, so I like Milwaukee better. I think that I'm more sold on Jabari being a solid starter or better than anybody on this team, because while I like Oladipo, I really do, I don't think that he does any one thing that is essential for a team. And I think Jabari could get there with scoring, especially if he can play the four.
Yeah.
And Orlando has a bunch of lottery tickets, and I like that concept, but we're getting close to having some of the lottery tickets that they're all the numbers are out and those guys didn't make it. So, like, Tobias Harris, I like him. I don't love him. Harkless, good, but not there. Like, they're going to need a couple of those guys to break out, but at the same time, when you have 8 lottery tickets, which is about what I think they have, some of those could definitely eventually work.
Yeah, I think the issue with that is I think they win more games. They're a better team now than Milwaukee. I do think Milwaukee is better in the long term. I like Oladipo. I worry that he's on the wrong team and he's learning. I would feel better about Oladipo if he was on another team, right? Because I think that they're asking him to do things that he really shouldn't be. They were playing at the point in certain periods last year. He shouldn't be, but he should be playing off the ball more. He should be like, he is very physically talented, so that should be taken advantage of. So, again, I'm not sold on this organization. I think they went in, they made some win now moves, and I don't know that they're quite ready. I don't know why they made those win now moves. This was a team that should have, like, you know, I think they had the cap, but they should have gone after, not Channing Frye, they should have gone after Lance. Lance would have been a good fit for this team, right? There are a couple other guys that would have been good. It's just, I'm not convinced that these guys know what they're doing, is my worry with it.
Yeah, and they also could have used that money to make a bid for Eric Bledsoe that made the Suns think about it, because I think Bledsoe would have been a nice piece, and Bledsoe would have been a great, if you were talking about lottery tickets, now that we're looking at where the CBA combination with the TV deal is going, Bledsoe's going to be a nice value where the Suns got him. So maybe you don't pry him away, but at least you make them pay a little bit more money, and you ingratiate yourself to one of the suddenly more important player agents in the league. I think that would have been a much smarter play than Channing Frye, and then also dumping Aaron Aflalo for nothing. I think that it was just a strange offseason for them in terms of asset management.
Yeah, well, I don't know why they moved. What was the reasoning behind that Aaron Aflalo trade? I mean, what are you thinking?
Well, the thing is, they got, I mean, 48 could be all right, but they another lottery ticket. But I get the logic. I had somebody on the podcast, I wish I remembered which guest it was, who was talking about how the market for Aflalo just wasn't there. And I think that's possible, but then you roll the dice with him and you hope that somebody gets hurt and that a team needs him. Like, think about now, if Oklahoma City could get a guy like Aaron Aflalo and they could figure out a way that they could do it without going over the cap, like, they would probably give up a pretty solid asset for it.
Well,
you know, you could, if you took Perkins back just to eat the contract, you could get a nice piece from Oklahoma City to get Aaron Aflalo to keep that team afloat.
If I told you that Aaron Aflalo was in, at the end of the season, I told you Aaron Aflalo was the best shooting guard in the league. Is that something that sounds completely crazy and off the wall, or sounds possible?
I think it's a fringy thing, but because I think Harden is very good.
Yeah.
But I think that Aflalo is underrated at a position that is terrible overall in the league.
If I said he was a top three shooting guard,
I would be fine with that. Though I know that there are some other things that absolutely hate him.
Obviously, it has to, you know, or like a top five. I think they're more than likely a top five shooting guard. And I think, like, he has upside potential that I think, like, you know, the world where, like, that where, like, Denver is a top four seed or a top three seed are kind of contingent on like, him, like, being going back to, like, he's been really good a couple seasons and going back to that potential. And then, like, having Gallo there for, like, the full season, right? But I think that, like, you know, I totally get the why Denver made the trade, and which is, like, anytime I totally get why Denver makes a trade, then the other team, you have to go, like, what were you thinking? I mean, it's like, okay, I could see it if you're, like, going for potential long-term, then why are you signing Channing Frye and Ben Gordon? What do you, I mean, like, you see what I'm saying? It's like you're going down this path, but then you're going the other direction. That's my confusion with the Magic.
Agree completely. Anything else on Orlando?
No, I mean, again, I think we both like the under on that team, and
yep.
We both think they're slightly better than Milwaukee, but like just in the short term.
Yeah, moving on to another bad team. Philadelphia won 19 games last year. Do you think they're better or worse than last year?
God, I think that this team is worse, and this is actually kind of it's really really hard. To be like, it's really hard to win that few games in the NBA. It doesn't happen that often. And, you know, the trick with this is that, like, even like when I ran the Sims, like, it's really hard for me to get a team like the Sim out at less than 15 and a half games. But congratulations, Sixers. You actually did it. I actually have them. So, to put it in perspective, the worst teams, like, I think 9 is the lowest win total ever, right? Like, 9 games over an 82-game season is the worst total win total ever. I think the Sixers.
I think so, yeah.
So I have them at worse than 9 wins. And again, obviously, I need to make some corrections, but I have them at, like, 9 or worse 13% of the time for this, which is just completely and utterly insane for the season. Right? So even though I do think that here's the thing. They have talent on this team. Right, they have like you know, they have Embiid, they have Noel. I think Noel's going to be great. I think that they're going to protect the hell out of him. I think the other thing is like in anybody who's read basketball on paper knows this is like they're running they're pushing the pace, and if you're a bad team you want to slow the pace down, right? So basically they are doing their utmost to lose games. Now the caveat is the league might actually step in and take some steps to make it really hard, because again what they're trying to do is get the draft picks. I think this team is going to be good in the future. I just think that, you know, I like the over, but I like the over because it's really hard to win less than 15 games, right? But it's not because I believe this roster is better than last year. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that 15 and a half is just a crazy low number. I think that it happens. It certainly does. But I also think that this Philadelphia team is worse than almost any other team has been constructed in my time covering the league.
I think the problem is that I think what Vegas is figuring on is that it might take 15 to actually get the number, like to get the most lottery balls. Because there's Boston, there's Milwaukee, there's Orlando, there's Philadelphia, there's Minnesota. There's like, if you look at it, there's maybe 10 teams that could decide to go, like Indiana could decide to go for it, right? So there are teams that could decide to like out and out tank. And if you have that, then, and I think Philly's smart enough to know how to do it, right? So they're going to keep speeding up the ball. And like, you know, I think I did a thing with, Coach Nick, B-Ball Breakdown, where we looked at the worst best and worst three-point shooters. And Tony Roten, like, I worked out his bad day three-point. So, like, what would be a bad day for Tony Roten? A bad day for Tony Roten, if he took, like, 10 shots, he might not make a single one. Like, 10 three-pointers. So they were doing things that, like, you know, it's like, yeah, just keep shooting. I don't make any coaches. Like, no, keep shooting them. We don't care. Right? So they were doing things that, like, that kind of were suspicious. So this is, I think, where Vegas is giving you that 15 and a half number. I do think the over is attractive, but like it's a bet that you would sweat the entire season.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a bet that you would sweat the entire season. And I like Nerlens Noel, but I don't think Nerlens Noel, when you have a bunch of bad players around him, is going to help the team win a lot of games now, because he's a defense primarily player. So he'll keep them in games, but they don't have the offense to put them over. They could lose games when they hold opponents into the 80s because they just have no scoring.
Yeah,
they could lose 85-78.
It's interesting because they have shown the ability to identify talent, which makes it even more suspicious when they put together a really bad roster. So it's you know, I think if they were trying to, and if you were saying, look, they're going to play 30 games at the end of the season with Embiid and Noel, then 15 and a half would be a walk. I mean, they could get to that number in like Like, they could get that number by February if they were actually trying and caring. I don't believe that's the case though. So I would say the over, but like be prepared to like be stressed out and sweating. I make the story like an NBA geek who was on there before. Like he had a beer with Sam Hinkie, and he basically said, "Can you win 18 games for us?" Right? And like Hinkie did look at him like he was crazy, but they did win those 18 games, right?
Yeah, and I think that why I would stay away from it is just because it's at a really good number, because I could see myself sitting there, you know, betting the over, and then you see this team win, you know, 5 games by the All-Star break, and you're sitting there going, why did I do that? But I can also see the reverse. I can see the, why would you ever bet that a team would have 15 or less wins? You know, to me, this is a classic stay away.
You get 9 wins for signing your name, basically.
Yeah.
And it's true. And so, like, you're basically just arguing about the last 6. And I think they're going to get them, but it's going to be kind of, you know, it might be one of the situations. Like, I think it's like if every other team is competitive and everybody's above, like, you know, everybody's going to finish above 24 wins, then 15 becomes an issue. It's like if you have somebody like the Celtics who are like, no, we're going to win 9 games, right? If it becomes a competition, then it's a real problem.
Agreed. We go from a team that everybody thought was going to be bad last year and was, to a team that everybody thought was going to be bad and had probably the most surprising season in the NBA. Phoenix Suns won 48 games last year, best team not to make the playoffs. Are they better, worse, or about the same?
I'm going to surprise you. I'm going to say that they're better.
I'm guessing that's Isaiah related?
Yeah, I think they have a deeper roster. I think I like their young players. They brought in a bunch of other players in. It's like, and everybody's arguing for regression for this team. All my numbers say this is over. This team, I've got them at 51 wins this year. 51. So, like, reading off, I've got them 51, 52, 51, 52, 50. So, like, my worst, and this is just a projection, my worst projection is 50. And my best is 56 for this team. So I'm way over. I'm way over where Vegas is on this team. And I think I know why Vegas is arguing the regression, but I do think that, like, they didn't have Bledsoe for half the season last year. Right? So they didn't have Bledsoe. Len didn't play. They added Isaiah Thomas, was really good. So, like, even if they lose Bledsoe now, like, you still got Isaiah Thomas to come in. So this is a much better team. They have a better roster, and I do think that they're a team that's also well coached. And I mean, I saw them. I said, and I will believe this to my dying day. If they'd been in the East, they made the finals out of the East last year. And I think I think they would have killed Indiana, and I think it would have been a hell of a series with Miami. And I think they were a better team than the regular season record because Bledsoe was healthy at like the end of the season. So this is a better team than they were last year. And I don't think it's even close, actually.
Yeah, I think that last season was probably close to their best-case scenario in terms of their talent. But their talent got better, and they're going to have similar circumstances now. And I would say that they're even deeper now. We should be getting more from Alex Len than last year, so that means they're a little bit deeper at center. Their guard depth got substantially better because they also added Zoran Dragic. And, yeah, they got worse at power forward, but it's not like Channing Frye was that much better than the Morris twins. So I think that what shocked me with them was how low their number was. I think you could put a number in the high 40s, and I would have been sketchy. You know, it would have been one of those, like, I think they're going to be better than that, but I wouldn't have been comfortable. But putting the number at 42.5 is just, just makes it easy for me.
Bledsoe only played 1,416 minutes last year. If you get 2,005 from him, and you've got Isaiah Thomas on that team as well, I mean, you're getting, like, good, strong quality minutes from that position where you really weren't getting that much before. I think this is, and I also kind of liked who they picked up in the draft. So I think this is a better team than last year. And as I said, I mean, I really like the Suns. I actually think that they're going to be. So let me look at the Suns right now. I've got them. Now again, they're playing in a really tough conference, a really tough division with the Clippers and the Warriors. But I still got them winning that division like quarter of the time. Right. So,
yeah.
And again, it would be more if they were somewhere else. I mean, let's see. I've got them at over 50 wins. Let's see. I've got them over 50 wins or better about 60% of the time. Right. 57% is where I got them. 50 or better. I think that they're a really good team. And I also, as I said, I like their coach. I like how they play. I like the players they have. And I think they're going to be a really good team. That's just me. So they're kind of like, that's a team that's like, that to me is going to surprise in the West. And they should be a surprise, though.
Yeah, it shouldn't be, because they were really good last year. And they were good, you know, they were good in a lot of ways. They were good in terms of record. They were a great team to watch. They were excellently coached. And they had a guy in Goran Dragic who was one of the most underappreciated players in the league. But, I mean, I think the people who followed him pretty closely understood how great he was.
Yeah.
So the other surprising team and to a lot of people in the West was the next team, and that's the Portland Trail Blazers. They won 54 games last year, finished with the fifth seed, and won that remarkable series with the Houston Rockets. Do you think they're better or worse than last year?
Slightly worse, because I don't think they can sustain the hot shooting that they have. There's no way they can sustain the hot shooting that they have, like multiple seasons. I think there are a lot of things that broke right for them. I think Vegas has them at 48.5. I kind of think that they got it dead on. 49 is my number for them. But, you know, it's dependent on a lot of things. I think they're good. I think, like, again, I think that number is going to go slightly up when I take the fact that, like, Durant is out for a while. But they're going to be slightly, I mean, like, they were worse the second half. They kind of came back to earth. They weren't bad, but they weren't, like, great. I think this is going to be a good team in the West for a while. But they're in that 50-win range. Now, I think... You know, I think if Damian Lillard, you know, doesn't find some D in his game, or there's a couple things that need to happen for this team for me to believe that they're going to take that next step to the contender in the West. I mean, I think right now they're maybe a 5-6 seed and in a first round out. Would you kind of agree with that assessment for them?
That's a little rosier than I'd have it. The stat that stands out to me is that their starting five, which was a very good starting five last year, missed a combined 13 games last season. LaMarcus missed 13 games, that's it. The other four guys started all 82 games. And I don't think they can sustain that. I don't think anybody can sustain that. And so this team, more so than most, is very dependent on their top guys. In a lot of ways, they remind me of the Warriors in that sense, except that they've had way better injury luck last year than the Warriors have ever had. So I think that all the other improvements and all that, I think, are a little bit more on the side. So I think that they're a well-coached team. I think that if they stay healthy, they will have a similar year to what they had this past year, but I don't think you predict that.
If you look at it historically, I think Portland was due. I mean, I think Portland historically has had the worst injury luck of any franchise, right? So having them have a season where they're abnormally, like if you look at it from a 30-year sample, it's like, you know, it's just regression to the mean, basically.
Yeah, and then this will be a regression to the mean for an average NBA team.
Yeah, I think, again, I see where you're coming from. I do think that, like, I think 48.5 is the right number for this team. And I think 48, 49 is where I see them. I think that they get some advantage for the fact that, like, Oklahoma's out. But I agree with you. I mean, if you told me that Portland was our annual hospital team and Oklahoma, then, again, like, that Denver division is even more attractive when you consider, like, Portland's injury history. So, yeah, no, I see it. I know what you mean.
Okay, so the next team is actually one of the more interesting ones for me in terms of over-under, and that's the Sacramento Kings, who won 28 games last year. Are they better or worse than last year?
They're better. I mean, I think that some of the guys are going to play. I think Rudy wasn't bad, and I think I like Collison. I mean, I think Collison was more than a competent guard. I mean, even though they lost Isaiah, I mean, I think that they're better. I mean, again, I don't think, again, they were bad last year, so this is not like, this is not me going like, oh, they're just better. Do you think they're better or worse than last year?
I think they're slightly worse because I don't think Collison really brings much to the table that Isaiah didn't, and I think he's a substantially worse player. I do think that they'll get something better from the two-guard position than they got because it can't really be worse, and I think that they'll have a benefit that, you know, they have enough offensive firepower that they'll just win some games. You know, they'll be a team that has some surprising wins, and I think that they can do that. But at the same time, it's another team that I think depth is a major issue for them.
Yeah, McLemore wasn't good for them last year. Hopefully he'll be better than he was last year. I think that
kind of has to be.
He was pretty terrible. I think that I think one of the things is, like, Reggie Evans is heavily featured. I like Reggie Evans. He wasn't great last season, but if he's closer to his historical form, then this team has a lot of upside. And he's a sneaky player because nobody ever gives him credit, but he's a guy who does, like, 30 stuff. So, like, if he's back to what he was, like, for the majority of his career, who's the guy who, like, just gets a lot of boards and does nasty things on defense, then you put him next to Boogie, and that's kind of actually kind of good. I mean, like, between him and Boogie, you can decently protect the rim. And so that's why I think I like the over on this team, and it's primarily for that, because I do think that, again, I do think that what they have in the post is interesting. I mean, this doesn't mean I think they're well. I mean, I'm saying I got them like where I have them Lakers territory, like 38 wins. But that's better than what they were last season, better than Vegas has them at 30.5. So I think they're better than that, actually.
Yeah, and the other challenge with them is that I don't even know like what blowing it up for them would be. You know, they're going to keep Cousins for the long term. I mean, maybe they would move Rudy Gay, but I don't. The downside risk with them is a little bit different.
If they move Rudy Gay, they're winning 45 wins. They're in the playoffs. We know.
There's a history.
Like you trade Gay, you win 10 more games. So you know now I'm even more sold on the over. They're a Rudy Gay. So like I think they're over now. If they make a Rudy Gay trade, they're the Raptors. So no. Now you've sold me. Now I'm definitely sold on the Kings over.
Okay, another team that you and I have talked about a lot but is interesting for over-under in some ways, and that's the San Antonio Spurs, who obviously won the NBA championship but won 62 games in the regular season. And you could make the argument that they got better. Do you think they got better?
I think they got better, yes, because I like Kyle Anderson. I really do like Kyle Anderson. Like, again, I'm going to say it's about the same because they lost Patty, who was really good for a significant part of the season, but I like Kyle Anderson, and I actually have a community service hours bet going. I think Kyle Anderson plays more than 1,500 minutes this season, and I really think he's going to be really. People are going to like look at him and Jordan Adams and be like, holy crap, that UCLA team was good. And I think they had we talked about it, they had conditioning issues on that program, but
they were poorly coached for the most part.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
in my opinion,
I think the question is, Vegas has them at 6.5. When was the last time San Antonio didn't win 58 games in the season? Right. So
seven years ago. That's the number that's in my head.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that this is a team that, like, regardless of what I do for this team, when I simulate them out, it's really hard for me to get them to like not. So let's look at how many times do I get the Spurs at less than 50 wins, right? So, and this is like, I'm doing like all sorts of injury simulations. So I have the Spurs winning less than 50 games only 7% of the time, right? And this is me like putting in the, like just trying to force people like going out for the full season and whatnot. So, and I got them below 500 out of 1,000 simulations 0.4% of the time. So the Spurs are a really, really good team. They were historically good last year. They're going to be really, really good this year. And people should not be surprised. And again, they're the kind of team, as I said, we make the argument that their backups are a playoff team. And I would totally kind of see them being in hell. I think if you took their second five and had Pop coach them in the East, they probably get a home series in the East.
It'd be definitely be interesting. So I looked it up, and the last time in a full season that the Spurs finished with less than 56 wins was 2009-2010, when they went 50-32, and they still made the Western Conference semifinals. And then they had that year, the year before that, and then before that, it was the last year where they won 56 or less was 1999-2000.
Yeah.
So they had that little dip. And then other than that little aberrational dip, they've just dominated.
Yeah. And again, I think you would have to like lose. Like, and again, they still haven't gotten a full season from Kawhi Leonard. And I think that should be kind of scary for everybody, because like I think they win just a ridiculous number of games when they're actually on the floor and playing like more than 20 minutes a game. So I do think that like I like the over, and I think that there's a shot that like. There's a shot that they're not even trying the last 10 games of the season, and they win 60 games.
Yeah, I agree with that. Do you have an estimate on your systems in terms of how often they win the title? Obviously, that's not a part of over-under, but I'm just interested.
I have actually done the sim. I know that, I mean, I would put them at 50% to win the to make the finals, and once they make the finals, I'd make that about an 80% chance to win. So I think that I'm about 40% for them to win the title right now. And again, I haven't like done the numbers. I'm going off the top of my head, because I think like the thing that could stop them, and I'm assuming they're getting the home court advantage in the majority of scenarios. They're also playing like, I'm assuming that the Spurs are playing, like in my sims, I have them winning. So I have the Spurs winning 61 games, and I'm assuming they're not playing anybody more than 30 minutes a game. So this is so people understand, like basically I'm saying, look, I'm going to make the team worse than it is, because I'm going to assume they're not going to play their best guy. They're just going to rest everybody, and they're still going to win 61 games. What that means is, like, once you get into the playoffs, the odds kind of go crazy in their favor, because they can just, like, start, like, increasing the minutes on their best guys. So it's really hard. Like, I mean, the only scenario The two likely scenarios I see where they could like not make the final. There's three scenarios I see. I see one, which is the Warriors are fully healthy come playoff time, right? And maybe the Spurs have some injury luck their way. I don't see that as very likely, because the likelihood of that Golden State Warriors team being fully healthy is not good. I think the other one is the Thunder, Steve Adams takes the leap and he's actually starting. But again, as long as Scottie Brooks is coaching, that becomes a kind of a longer odd scenario. I think the Clippers also being healthy, and the Clippers are sneaky in the sense that like they've always had injury issues come playoff time as well. Right, so Chris Paul is never like fully healthy come playoff time. And I think the other one is like the Rockets kind of figure it out and everything gels, and then got kind of interesting. But I still think even with all those scenarios, San Antonio is 50% to make the finals. And once they're there, they're beating unless like something. And again, there's a 20% chance that something happens. I don't see Cleveland or Chicago or anybody out of the East being strong enough to be favored over them, particularly if they're not going to have home court. I don't think anybody's going to have home court over them in the finals. That's why I'm there.
I can definitely see that. Let's move on to the Toronto Raptors, who had I would say by all accounts, a very successful season, maybe other than the playoff result. And they won 48 games last year. Do you think they're better or worse than last year?
Wow. I think they're slightly better because they were banged up. I think it is a better team. I like some of the guys they picked up, but it's not much better. I think they're about a 50-win team. I think where I would argue is that there's a very real chance that, like, and this is the going trend with Masai, is that the team will always be better at the end of the season than at the beginning. Right, so whereas I think they're a 50-win team now, I think he'll make some move to get them like more in the 52-53-win range. I forget what the Eastern Conference odds are for the Raptors, but they're probably some of the more attractive on the board, because I do think that if there's a team that's going to jump from the pack and maybe challenge for that one seed, I would rather put my money on the Raptors than on the Bulls, actually.
Yeah, I can totally see the logic on that. But the other factor that goes the other way that I've been thinking about with them is that it looks like they have a pretty clear-cut advantage on their division. I think that, you know, Brooklyn going down, the Knicks aren't there, Boston and Philly are both bad. And I could see them settling into the third spot, or even the second spot, but probably the third spot in the East, and just basically be sitting there the last five games of the year and go, well, let's just hang out where we are, we're not going to go anywhere, and just, you know, rest the guys and get them ready for the playoffs, because they're going to have a more challenging matchup in the 3-6.
I think they're going to care about the 2 seed. I think they're going to care about being home versus the Bulls. I think there's a shot that the 1 seed's in play too. So, I mean, I would say that, you know, there's a world where like somebody on the Cavs gets hurt, and I think that they can do that. So I do think they're going to play hard all season, and they're also a younger team, so I think they do that. And again, I also like the fact that, I mean, like they got some guys that can take the leap. I like a lot of the players on that team. So
yeah, so I love Valanciunas particularly.
So say they move like somebody like DeMar for a follow, or DeMar for like. And again, I think DeMar is a better player than he used to be, but he's still not as good as people think. So there are some still guys that they could still move to get better on that team.
Yeah, I think so too. And they also, most of their team is either, I think almost all of their guys are either on the positive end of their aging curve or at the part where it doesn't change a whole lot. You know, like, I don't think Lowry's going to get much better, but he's already really good and he's not going to get worse. So if you're in that spot on your curve on your guys, then that's a good sign in terms of winning more games. And the fact that their division is going to be worse, probably, I would say, that might give them a few more wins as well. So that helps the over become a more applicable bet. I would still be a little bit uncomfortable with it, but I think that they have a pretty respectable shot at it.
Who do you think so the Raptors are the team most likely to win the Atlantic. Who do you think is the second most likely team to win the Atlantic?
I would say Brooklyn, even though I don't particularly like them.
I would say the Knicks, because I believe strongly that that Phil has a move in him, and I think it's going to be an interesting and a good move. So I don't see the Knicks as currently constituting winning the Atlantic. I do think they're going to make a move, and it's going to be kind of like you might see something really scary at the end of the season for that Knicks team, right? So as much as people laugh at their title odds and the division and the conference odds might be really interesting if you consider that. And again, but that's me, right?
I think that's fair. Next team is the Utah Jazz. They're an anomaly in this because, and this is why I want to do both at the same time, because they won 25 games last year and their over-under is 25.5. So are they better or are they worse?
I think they're better. I'm not a huge fan of Tyron Corbin, but I think they're better. I mean, I think that they literally had nobody who could play the point last year at the beginning of the season, and it showed. I mean, they're close in a lot of these games, and they're also playing at altitude. I think that I would say it's an easy, like, and again, I haven't put in the schedule adjustments, the altitude adjustments. Once I put that in, I'm thinking that this is going to be like, they should win 30 games. I mean, it's really hard for you to play in Utah and not win at least 30 games, right? Because you're going to get a bunch of teams coming in on, like, the second night of back-to-backs at altitude. So there's going to be, like, five games where, like, basically you're going to get, like, a free win, right? So I do think that, like, the oversize, I do think they're slightly better because they're young. But I don't know that this team is going to grow with the current coaching staff. Do you kind of see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying. I think they're also a good candidate for internal improvement because they have a lot of young guys. I think guys like Alec Burks and Favors. And I also like, as much as I'm not a huge fan of him, I think Trevor Booker is a nice little pickup for them. I think that he's a more traditional four in some ways. Marvin Williams was, you know, he had his moments, but he was like that. But I also think that guys like Gordon Hayward and, you know, Alec Burks, as I already mentioned, could definitely do it. And I think they got better at coach, which is a useful thing for them because I like Quinn Snyder more than Lane Corbin. I think he'll do a decent job there.
Yeah. My favorite player on the team is probably Jeremy Evans, who's probably, like, people are going to be surprised when he's a really good team. He's like a really good player for some good team, like, 2-3 years down the line. Because
I agree with that.
He the guy does things, right? Like, and again, I look at all sorts of different metrics, and all sorts of different metrics like Jeremy Evans. It's just, you know, the Jazz don't seem to.
Yeah, for whatever reason. And the other factor with them is they're a team like Milwaukee in that sense that I think they can define success in a very different way than wins and losses.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're in a situation where they can, you know, emphasize the guys like Rudy Gobert, the younger guys in their lineup, then I think I could see them losing some extra games at the end, not even necessarily tanking, but just not emphasizing winning in that sense and not self-sabotage because all their guys are young. And I could see them not prioritizing winning, and that would really change the outlook for them in terms of the over-under number.
Well, I think as long as they're not actively trying to lose, I think the over is attractive for them. Because, as I said, it's just where they play. If they're trying, like, if they're playing their hardest, they should win more than 25 games just because of the fact that they play in Utah, right? So that's my feeling with this team.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And the last team for over-under is the Washington Wizards, who won 44 games last year. And we'll avoid the Beal injury first, but on pure talent, do you think they're better or worse than last year?
Are they better or worse? I think that they're better. So they're a 44-win team. I think they're better, but it's a marginal. Because I do think they got worse with the Ariza trade, right? So losing Ariza does actually hurt, but I think their bench got stronger, right? So I think that is the issue. Now, they still have the fact that I don't know who's actually playing the two. Besides, you know, they had the depth issue with the two, and they still do. It's like I was hearing somebody saying like that they should try to get Ray Allen to come into town, which would be interesting. I do think again, I think that they're better, but it's just slight. I my number is like the under on this team.
Yeah, I think that the issue I have with them is just, and obviously we don't know if Bradley Beal being out for a few weeks is going to affect that number, but I think because I think they took it off the board, but I just thought before Bradley Beal got hurt that 49.5 was just too high a number for them because while it was a possible outcome, I didn't think that 50 wins was a likely outcome for them, like the most, especially not more than 50%.
It's hard for me to think that I always forget the name of the coach. I always get him confused. It's not Casey. It's
your good friend Randy Whitman.
Yeah, Randy Whitman. It's hard for me to see a Randy Whitman coach team win 50 games. That's just kind of. No. I mean, because particularly when you start making it tough for him by like putting injuries and like saying, oh, you have to pick the right guys to play. It's like, you know, when you take a bad coach and you give him like minute decisions, it doesn't go well. So, I think, could they win 50 games? Yeah. I don't think it's a likely scenario for them to win 50 games. I think I got them, let's see, I've got them at 50 or better only about 12% of the time. And again, the other thing that goes, it's like somebody in that division. So like basically my numbers all say like it says that every team in that division is within a game. Like every team but Orlando is about like at 500 or like 42 wins. That's where everybody is. And So one of those teams will probably win like 50 games. One of the four, right? Which of the four is the question? And given the coaching, I have a hard time. I mean, I feel like this is a 45 to 50 win team, and that's, I think, where they'll be. And I think it's aspirational for them to win like 50. Whereas I think Toronto can definitely go to the next level. I don't know that this team can do it with like Randy Whitman. And again, I don't like the fact that they lost Ariza. I don't like the fact that Martell Webster is being invited to arthritis conferences. You know about this, right?
Yeah.
He was invited as a keynote speaker, like a speaker at an arthritis conference because of the things he's having. So they have some real issues in terms of depth. Now, again, as I like the guys that they picked up in the bench, but I think that if this team wins 48 games, they're going to consider that like that's going to be for them like a huge win, right?
And they're also an older team than people think, because you think Wall and Beal and they're, you know, a great young backcourt and all that, but the rest of their team is pretty old. You know, Gortat is getting up there. Paul Pierce is old, as we all know. Nene is getting there. And while they added good front court depth that should be young and getting better in DeJuan Blair and Chris Humphreys, there aren't that many guys on this team where you say, oh, that's a big internal improvement. So for them, the improvement has to be health, because Paul Pierce is not a substantial upgrade over Trevor Ariza, if he's an upgrade at all. I don't think that he is, personally.
Yeah, they have real issues at wing depth, and I think that they're already having real health issues, so I think the under is even more attractive. And again, it isn't even Beal. Like, the Beal thing isn't that big of a deal for me, because I think it's not that he's not talented, but I don't think Whitman uses him properly. But the Webster and the fact that they lost Ariza is a bigger deal for me, because you're basically relying on Paul Pierce to stay healthy for all 82 games and play a crap load of minutes. And that's not – it's going to be a real issue for this team, particularly since Paul likes to get in shape as the season goes on.
Yeah, he does. So the other gambling issue that I thought of, and this has became especially more relevant, actually was a part of a piece for Hardwood Paroxysm, which is not out yet, and I'm mad that it hasn't come out yet, because – I said that the guy who I think is a serious dark horse to win MVP, and I don't know what his odds are, is Chris Paul. And what I wanted to ask you on is, let's say Oklahoma City is further down in the race for the one seed, which I think we can both agree on.
Mm-hmm.
How likely is it that the Clippers either put in a serious challenge or actually get the number one record in the Western Conference?
I think that it all comes down to how much of a crap Greg Popovich gives. So if Popovich doesn't care... Right. So if he doesn't care, like at the one seed and like Clippers and Doc are going to want that one seed. Right. And there's a real possibility this is a feel good LA series. Now, like, the problem with this is like and I always worry about this teams where, like, with the two guys, it's really hard when you have like two guys. If the Clippers are the one seed, and I think there's a 40% chance that the Clippers might be the one seed. Right. Even though, I love San Antonio, but, like, and I think they're the over, but, like, I think that the Clippers could definitely, I've got San Antonio at 61, I've got the Clippers at, like, 56, but, like, in some cases, they're over San Antonio. I do think that, let's say it's a 30% chance that they're the one seed, right? So, let's say it's a 30% chance of the one seed. There's about a 50-50 chance that it's Blake that's getting the credit, right? So... You're at 15% there for and then you're also kind of accounting for the fact like there is no surprise team in the East or some other team bubbling up that like can draw away. So I'd put Chris Paul at 10-1 to win the MVP. Where is he listed at right now?
I don't know. I can try to look, but I think that
I can look this up.
There's also a narrative there. I think that, yeah. And that has power. We saw that with Derrick Rose's MVP. You know, there a narrative can win a guy an MVP. And also for me, Chris Paul's a guy who has that talent. You know, he's not a guy like Anthony Davis who we love, but he needs to get it there. We already know what a Chris Paul MVP season looks like, because he already had one. He just didn't win the award.
Yeah, 2008. So I've got, here's the MVP future. I'm getting this from Odds Checker, right? I think these are live. So Betfair has LeBron at 20-21, which is basically almost even money, has Kevin Durant at 23-10, has Blake at 19-2, and has Chris Paul at 15-1.
So I think that's a great
Blake,
one to take.
Blake has better odds than Chris Paul to win the MVP.
I don't think that happens. Personally, I just don't see. I mean, obviously, if Chris Paul got hurt again, then that would be an issue. But Blake is more famous, but I think that the people who vote for the MVP would vote for Chris Paul.
Yeah, I think Blake is actually going 9-1. Chris Paul is going 11-1. Carmelo is going 16. Then James Harden 18-1. Derek at 12. Curry at 30. I like Curry. Curry at 33-1 is a nice. That's value.
Yeah, that's a great bet. I think that Harden is a nice one at that number because Harden, they could win 55 games. Yeah. You know, they could do something crazy.
I think if I had picked the three teams that could win the West, it would be four teams. I think. You know, I would like, so I'm trying to see who's the Nugget with the best odds, right? Would that be...
I don't think any Nuggets win in the MVP.
If they...
I just don't see it. Even if they had the best record in the West, I just don't see it.
Ty Lawson at 1,000-1. I like that. Ty Lawson at 1,000-1. If they win the MVP, I mean, I think there's a one in, there's maybe like a 1 in 50 or 1 in 20 chance that they could win. But I would consider that interesting. I mean, I think that's like a high margin, like low risk bet.
Well, yeah, at 1,000-1, it is pretty high margin.
Yeah, I think that. I mean, I agree with you that I like the Chris Paul. There's the risk. In fact, I think Blake Griffin is ahead of him on that. I think that LeBron. Well, I think the thing is, I like the Kevin Love odds better than LeBron's because I think LeBron's even money. Kevin Love's 22-1, right? So that's more interesting because I do think that he's the guy who could actually like see some love in that direction.
Yeah, it's definitely a possibility. Are there any other topics you want to talk about?
No. Hey, Kyle Lowry is 500-1.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I would say that's really interesting. I like
that better than the Lawson one because I just think the Raptors are going to be better and they're in the East, so they're going to get attention.
Yeah, and the Raptor fans are like really loud on the internet. So the whole
I'm not sure that affects MVP voting, but I think that I think Lowry has a great story, you know, he's battled through teams and all that, so he has the narrative advantage, and he's clearly the most famous player on his team, which is a huge benefit too. Correct. You know, we could argue a bunch of guys for the Nuggets, but if the Raptors are top two in the East, it's going to be because of Kyle Lowry.
Cool. Yeah, no, I agree with that. So that brings us to the end of our over-under podcast. Is there anything else? I mean, do you want to talk like championship favorites or something?
I think we did a pretty good job of that. I also, for me, just with the problem with title things is I think what we've already learned from the last week is that there will be a lot that will change it. And I think if we want to talk that, I'd like to talk with you again, like, you know, right before the season starts or right as the season starts, we can go through that because I think we're going to see a lot change.
I know some people that basically all they do is they basically buy San Antonio to win the championship at like different points of the season as the odds go up and down on that, and then basically just hedge come the playoffs. And what you do is like, because if you have like San Antonio 20-1 to win the championship, which has been able to get San Antonio 10-1, maybe San Antonio 21 at points in the last few seasons, and then just you hedge against that individual games, and like, you know, you can, people just, you know, make a lot of money doing that, right? So it's what you're looking for on that is who do you think is undervalued? And just, you know, you're not necessarily going to win the money on that, but then you can get into positions where you're like playing against the field on that, right? So individual games or individual series outcomes. And people
that's a great point. Here's the one thing I'll ask you. Just ballparking, you don't have to use your numbers if you don't want to. How many teams do you think there are that have at least a 5% chance of winning the title?
How many teams that I think have a 5% chance of winning the title? So San Antonio, Cleveland, Golden State, Clippers, Thunder, that's five. I'm going to say Rockets. I'm going to say Bulls, 5%. So I've got seven teams right now. And now I'm actually like thinking about the West real quick. So I've got seven teams. And let's see, I'm going to go through all the divisions. So I can't give the Raptors 5% chance. Like, I just can't do it. I said the Thunder, I can't give the Blazers. The Blazers, you can't win the title the first time. They need to make at least the conference finals before they can win the title. I don't think the Nuggets can do it. I don't think, Suns might be my eighth team, I think. And I think the Suns and, if I put the Suns in, I have to put in the Mavericks and the Grizzlies. And I don't feel comfortable putting any of those three teams in. So seven teams, basically.
I think it might be six, and the team that I might take out is the Bulls. Because I just don't see the Bulls in as presently constructed. Obviously, that could change, but I really don't think it will. I have a lot of trouble seeing them beating the Western Conference champion in the NBA Finals.
I think there's better than 5%. I think you're taking...
Yeah, but 5% is really low, though.
I'm saying there's a 20% chance that Powell and Rose come back to form, right? So that's the first caveat. So 20% chance that they come back to form. If they come back to form, And that's the 20%. That means I think that they make the finals about, of that 20%, maybe like 2/3 of the time. So maybe like 15%, right? And of that 15%, they win the title like half of that, so 7%. So that's how I'm coming up with the 5% for the Bulls, right? But it would imply Powell and Rose coming back to form, right? And if that, but, and I do think there's like, you know, if the 20 out of 100 times that does happen, right? It's not the most likely outcome, but it is a possible outcome. Remember, you said 5%.
Yeah, and you could increase that. For me, I think it's Rose and, so if you think of it as an equation, it's Rose and brackets or parentheses, either Gasol or Mirotić has a good year. Because I think as long as you get one of those two, you're fine.
But let's extend that. So those two things have to happen, and then like Noah has to be available come playoff time. Right. That's why.
Of course. Of course.
It's 20% because Noah does actually get banged up with like plantar fasciitis all the time. So this is why I think that I got to give the Bulls a 5% chance. I do think that there's a 5% chance that they win the title.
Yeah, and that's fair.
And it's stronger because of the fact that the East is really weak. Right. So basically, it's the Raptors and the Cavs that they have to go through. And again, there's also it's like what if Kevin Love gets hurt, or what if LeBron James gets hurt? Right. So. What if Kyrie gets hurt? So these things kind of like, you know, play into the decision.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Anything else you want to go over?
No, I think we're good. I think we're good. It's been fun, Danny.
Yeah, it's been fun. Thanks for taking the time, man.
We'll do it again.
Thanks again to Arturo Coletti for taking the time. It was a pleasure having him on. You can read him at boxscoregeeks.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Arturo Galletti. That's ArturoGalletti. Box Score Geeks, great site, really like Arturo and everybody else they have there, and it was so much fun having him on. I mean, when we talked about this in the original idea, I was never expecting it to be this, let's say, expansive, but it provided a way for me, and I'm sure for Arturo, to really clarify positions and think about things. That conversation at the end about the teams with a 5% chance of winning the title, you know, I really had to think about that once we started going through it, and he made a great point with the Bulls, so I hope you enjoyed it. It was certainly a labor of love, if you want to put it that way, because recording it and editing it definitely took a lot of time, but I certainly feel it was worth it. I'm super happy with it. So, as I always say, if you have any insight or input, I will read it, I will listen, and I will do my best to respond. You can email me at daniel.larue@realgm.com, or you can hit me up on Twitter at Danny Larue. That's DannyLeroux. I'm, to be completely honest, not entirely sure how I want to do the rest of the preseason time, but the podcast will keep going strong through the season. I already talked to some people, but I'm sure I'll get more. It's a lot of fun, and thank you so much for listening. Take care, and make it a great day.